Welcome to the Revenue Lounge, a podcast for revenue operations professionals who want to understand the various facets of this important go-to-market function. In each episode, the team at Nectar interviews revenue warriors on how they are reimagining revenue operations in creative and disruptive ways, and what are their secrets to building a scalable and predictable revenue engine. Let's get started.
Traditional approaches to demand generation are no longer enough. The lines between marketing and revenue teams are blurring, and the need for alignment has never been greater. Companies are realizing that demand generation isn't just about filling the top of the funnel. It's about driving measurable growth across the entire customer lifecycle. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Revenue Lounge. I am your host, Randy Likas. And in this episode, we will dive into redefining demand generation through a revenue-centric lens. We'll explore what it takes to build a holistic, 360-degree view of demand generation strategy that not only fuels new pipeline, but also strengthens retention and expansion efforts. And joining me today is Irina Jordan. Irina is the head of demand generation at Chowli. She drives Chowli's business growth by developing and executing strategies that increase market presence and generate demand. She's also a member of Go-to-Market Fund, Women in Revenue, and Pavilion. Irina, welcome to the Revenue Lounge, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Randy. Very excited about this conversation, especially as we are roaring into the next year.
Yeah, 100%. So I usually like to start and just ask you to maybe give us a little bit of a background on your career journey and your current role at Chowli.
I am not a classically trained marketing person. I came from the old USSR, and I did get my business education, my second master's degree here, and since then, I've been across industries. My core specialty is software as a service. What industry is actually irrelevant because SaaS is a discipline that's agnostic. You can apply that across any industry as long as the fundamentals. At my current role, which I'm actually really excited how my role is titled, Head of Demand Gen, it creates a very specific spec. And I've been VP of marketing, I've been a CMO, I've been director, like I've went through all the traditional, but this is like my favorite role to date because it really sets the spec for everybody involved because they already have their own definition of demand gen is, and you come in and you set your boundaries and kind of your blueprint for that. And especially in the space, Chowli is in the restaurant tech space. We are actually launching an off-premise platform. We're working on a massive product launch for the next year, which I find extremely exciting, especially from the demand gen perspective. And this is a very unique industry as well, as you might imagine. Food gets very emotional. So restaurant tech gets emotional by default. So for me, the whole journey, just being in the space, I think software as a service is here to stay no matter how many kind of permutations it's experiencing, especially with GenAI and whatnot. But their fundamentals will always be evergreen as long as you understand how to really work them and the best approaches, you will shine in any industry and in any role, especially in demand gen. Mm-hmm.
So I was taking a look at the Chowli website in preparation for this conversation, and your platform serves restaurants and restaurant operators, and I would imagine of all sizes. So I'm curious, do you have a demand gen motion that focuses on different segments, you know, SMB, mid-market, enterprise, where maybe you're selling to large chains or companies that maybe have multiple buying committee members as part of a decision to bring you all on?
Our ICP, Ideal Customer Profile, is an independent restaurant operator. And from the definition, it's one, we call it 1 to 5 locks, 1 to 5 locations. It can be your mom and pop in your neighborhood or somebody who's starting to expand because, and it's usually regional or local because it's usually one person that oversees those locations and they start scaling up. So as such, you're literally talking to people who are on the ground, on the floor, sometimes yep. stepping in at the last minute to cover some server, but they're also really savvy business practitioners. I'd say the real estate agents and independent restaurant operators are the two toughest audiences. If you can be profitable in that industry for this particular ICP, you can be profitable in any kind of market because you're dealing with people who know the value of the dollar. They're mm-hmm. working it, they're grinding it, and especially restaurants in the United States post-pandemic, these people are so resilient and you really have to earn their respect. So for me, our ICP is very exciting because you eat at your mom and pop shop, a restaurant, or do they take out, like, you really know who those people are? So for me, being able to help with what Charlie off-premise platform is offering is extremely gratifying.
Yeah. You had mentioned in preparation for this that your role is quite unique in that you're revenue focused, right? And I think a lot of times people think of demand gen as strictly being maybe lead or top of the funnel. Can you explain a little bit about how that differs from maybe a traditional perception of demand gen roles?
Well, for starters, there is no such thing as MQLs. They don't exist.
Yep.
And I've never been a fan of them because there is so much hard debate about it, and it's a completely pointless debate. For me, I'm part of the revenue team, and the revenue team is CS, customer success, sales, activations team, and moi, and my team. So in our case, my primary audiences are salespeople and our customer success, and primarily our salespeople, because I'm a huge fan of the bowtie model where you have to really bring in that new, but you also need to cultivate your existing customer base. Because if you're bleeding, no matter how much you bring in, you'll still be like, your bucket will be leaking. So for me, it's like, how can we create this 360 demand gen holistic experience, even though demand gen usually is not new, but what about upsells? What about expansions? Again, our people are independent restaurant owners. What about that second location, third location, fourth location, fifth locations? We want them to grow with us. Yep. So for me, that is exciting. So in my case, my arbitrage is my salespeople. So I actually have a base salary, and I also have variable. I have a monthly quota for SQLs. And the definition of the SQL at Charlie is an actual opportunity. So when a sales guy comes in and marks a lead that came in as an opportunity, that is what I get counted on. So I don't get to decide what constitutes what I bring to the table. It's the people on my team who are really, really good at their jobs make that decision for me. And that makes me accountable for how I structure the whole demand gen program. Because again, no MQLs and not technically even SQLs, because they tell me what they find a viable conversation to have.
Yeah. First of all, amen. I love the fact that you're not focused on MQLs. I 100% agree with you that it's kind of a pointless metric. And so we're focused on opportunities. I'm curious how that manifests when you generate a lead. Are you starting at opportunities and having maybe early staged zero value opportunities that you're trying to generate? Let's say, how does demand manifest as a lead per se? If it's not an MQL, what is passed over to the salesperson?
It's actually very easy. A lot of things stay with me because we work in a very particular industry. We have certain data points that need to be collected for our salesperson to have a meaningful conversation, like point of sale. That's a restaurant. Your Square, your Toast, your Spot On. Where are you located? How many locations? And also, we have very specific spots on our website where people can submit that kind of form. And it's really bottom of the funnel submission. Anything that comes through like virtual workshops, trade shows, for example, if somebody comes to a booth and has a conversation with one of our sales guys, if they cannot book it on their calendar and know what exactly that conversation is going to be about, it stays with me. So demo booked with the person giving full consent and raising their hand and saying, I want to talk about Charlie off-premise platform. That is what constitutes an opportunity where a salesperson says, this is worth my time. I'm willing to spend my 30, 45 minutes having this conversation.
Yep, got it. So you mentioned events. What are some of the other channels that you use to develop interest and demand?
Another controversial topic is the whole definition of what is brand or brand campaign. Mm-hmm. For me, it is intertwined with demand gen, because if you don't earn the trust and respect of the market and your buyer while they're doing this buyer's journey, especially with people like restaurant owners, you are dead in the water before even they have the conversation with you. So you have to work extra hard to get the demand gen going, because you have to persuade them that you are trustworthy and you're reliable. So for me, thought leadership and collaborations with people in the space are very critical. And again, people say, how is that demand gen? I'm like, that's my bread and butter. If my top of the funnel, based on very solid fundamentals of, we create the content that really hits close to those independent restaurant operators and they can come to us. One of the great offerings we've been doing this year is profitability workshop. We don't talk about Charlie, what we talk about it. How do you structure your operations? How do you structure your off-premise? what things you need to pay attention to, what is your hospitality moment, what makes you unique, what is your digital storefront, how are you taking care of your customer reviews, how are you creating your kind of experience digitally, not just your foot traffic in store. And so we come in with, we want to educate you because then we can have a very equitable conversation about how we can help. Yep. This is just being a vendor. Like vendor is like really bad. You want to be a partner, you want to be a trusted advisor. So I'm really big on organic thought leadership, collaborations with people in the space, working closely with customers who come in and share their experiences, you know, success stories. And I'm really lucky because my CEO, Sterling, he's a really good ambassador. He has really good presence and he's really active on LinkedIn. So that helps me. So we work together in structuring content strategy where he's driving it and we are driving as a brand. And becomes very cohesive because, again, without the brand, you're one of many. And yep. then you have to struggle so, so hard.
Yes, absolutely. And very interesting. So you mentioned a few minutes ago about the bow tie. And I'm also a very big fan of Winning by Design and how they talk about, you know, both sides of that bow tie. Can maybe you elaborate a little bit farther on how you address both sides of that model, generating new opportunities, but then once you land a customer, you know, retaining and expanding with the customer base?
Not only am I a huge fan of Winning by Design and Jacko, I've taken this class multiple times being a Pavilion member, and I'm also the ambassador because, again, I'm really, really big. I have the book right there on my table. Like, I'm huge. But from my perspective is, and again, everybody understands the lifetime value cost of the customer or the expansion of existing customer base. For me, the definition of the bow tie, it's that holistic flywheel. And in my case, those profitability workshops, we want our customers to be the first to know about that. When mm-hmm. we go to the shows, I make sure we have complimentary passes, especially for people who are in the region, that they can come for free and be part of that experience. We have momentum built in where we can record conversations. We have a lot of kind of automation around really capturing the sentiment. And when mm-hmm. I see something interesting, it's either a success story or interesting feedback, or even like going on social media and like shaping that experience up. We're really big in recognizing our customers. And it sounds maybe hokey, but there are so many specialty food days in a month, you know, chocolate cake, muffins, coffee, sandwich. We showcase our customers that way and we take them across platforms. Most of them are active on Insta and Facebook. Some of them are active on Twitter and LinkedIn, and we're respectful of that space. So for us, it's just day to day. And again, for me, demand gen is to have this PS. How are customers viewing us? Because for me, that makes my job easier because as we are an off-premise platform and as they're growing, that is additional money for the company. Because for me, ultimately, I look at, is the company growing? How is our EBITDA? We say, is our North Star being, like, are we meeting that North Star goals? So yes, I need to bring new SQLs, but at the end, if we are losing money, I can't be on the chopping block because I'm very sensitive to what are the core functionalities and how they're perceived, and I'm very pragmatic about it. So yeah. we need to make sure that it's a 360 view of our customer base and prospective base because they're just going, because your existing customer becomes new customer and your customer becomes, and it just goes in a circle. And you yeah. want that to be a very cohesive motion.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more with you. There's a big debate right now when we talk to different companies around how they feel about attribution and attribution models for marketing. And I know you've got some strong opinions on that. Why do you think this debate misses the point on attribution? And how should companies refocus their efforts?
It's again, you know, the whole opposition, sales versus marketing. And I'm like, why? What's the point? I mean, if the company's not doing well, there will be a rework. A bunch of salespeople will be fired and a bunch yep. of marketing, like nobody wins. So yep. for me, the perspective is as the revenue team, what are the things that are working well and what can we amplify more and what can we bring to the table as a team? So for example, and people's like, oh, this person who could just came in as an inbound lead, I had like a very sporadic conversation with them, maybe at a trade show or 6 months ago, tried to cold call them. And now I'm like, that is the whole multi-touch attribution where if you want to take credit for that, I don't really care. For yeah. me, the goal is this person talked to you, saw us on social, saw us at an event, yep. came to the booth, had a conversation, maybe part of the workshop, got an email, and they're like, okay, I'm ready. And yep. I'm like, I don't care how they ended up talking to us. So the whole attribution, it's nice for, and for me, the only interest is what's working at this particular moment because seasonality is a consideration. Economy is a consideration, especially for restaurants. You have to really be mindful of the independent SMBs what their sentiment is. Like, you want to pay attention to that. But besides the point is, like, what works right now, but how they end up talking to you is somewhat irrelevant, because most likely it wasn't just one magic unicorn kind of touch and they're like, yeah, I totally want to talk to you. It took a few things for them to warm up to you, word of mouth, and they needed extra nudge, whatever that is. As long as we can create this experience as a revenue team together, the whole attribution thing becomes irrelevant.
Pointless. I think it helps quite a bit when you think about it as far as how your goals and your goal on pipeline revenue, not MQLs, right? And so that is very much, I think, the right approach. But then as you have different investments that you make in different marketing programs, how do you know which ones are working, which ones to double down on, which ones to cut? If we're not thinking about attribution, maybe marketing influence, we just would love for you to speak about that a little bit. How do you know where you should keep investing or where you should maybe reapply money?
Mm-hmm. Sterling, our CEO, used to be an actuary, and he's a total data nerd. So we have very good setup in Sigma. So we track everything by channel. How leads came into us. Is it outbound? Is it inbound? If it's inbound, is it from a partner? Is it from Google Ads? Is it organic? Is it a trade show? So that accountability is real time, and everybody can go and look at that dashboard. For me, the only point of reference is what I'm seeing pop and play on that. Example of the trade show, especially when I came in, I'm like, how much did you close? Show me the money. If I'm not showing the money, guess what? We are not going to the trade show. And not only it needs to cover the cost of the trade show, it needs to be at least 3x to 5x to make it all worthwhile. Mm-hmm. And that was an interesting kind of, and I, again, another controversy, people's like, how can you report to CRO? I report to the chief revenue officer, and the guy is awesome. So for me, we have a very pragmatic approach to things, and we have really good team kind of discussion about what works, what doesn't, because he's very pragmatic, I'm very pragmatic, and we get it done. Like, he's one of the best people I worked kind of report to, because we get it. So we had this conversation, and there were some events that Charlie has been going in for many years. And when I went, I'm like, I'm not seeing you closing. Mm-hmm. Guess what? You will not be going to that. And he's like, I get it. I'm like, let's try this instead. So it is that transparency of how much you spend and how much you get back. And it can't be just one-on-one map out. It needs to be not just the whole, what kind of annual recurring revenue you're going to get out of it? What is your projected retention for that customer? So you look at the entire life cycle, and then you kind of go back from that.
Yep. Very good. So there's a big challenge in SaaS right now, where a lot of companies that were heavily outbound focused in terms of emails and calls and things like that, kind of, there's been platforms like Outreach, SalesLoft, all those different platforms that help develop
we
a lot of automated.
SalesLoft, I'm aware.
Okay. So what we're seeing is that people are just becoming immune to those because there's been misuse of those platforms, right? There's so much now. And then there's AI, SDR, so just more automation. And people are seeing these and they can recognize them a mile away, and they apply their mental spam filter and they just kind of ignore it or. And I imagine that if you're calling on restaurant operators who are very busy managing their business, that they don't necessarily have a lot of time to respond to a lot of these automated messages. So I'm just curious to get your opinion. You use SalesLoft. How are you using it differently today than maybe you were using it a year and a half, 2 years ago? And what are your thoughts on this general trend that we're seeing? There's a term that was coined, like, we're in this period of the great ignore, which is, it's just so hard to get people to engage. We'd love your perspective on that.
You have to be super contextual to what your ICP is. In your case, you have much more sophisticated audiences, a kind of more B2B buying, you know, corporate committees. In our case, we literally have people who wash dishes sometimes. And those are the people who are best reached by phone and text. You literally, while they're like on driving somewhere or in the restaurant, you catch them and then you schedule something with them. And I've learned that by actively engaging with our customers and figuring out, even for like customer success stories, they will be like, oh yeah, I'm talking to my contract, I'm opening second location, you got 15 minutes, so let's get going. And he's literally like with a plumber. And I'm like email comes secondary, like social comes third.
Yep.
So in terms of our sales guys are very sophisticated in terms of how they approach it, and they do have sequencing and everything, but for us, it's just a very supplemental piece. So you have to look at what your ICP is and play with that. Like, restaurant industry is not as sophisticated as a lot of, like, if you were catering to me as a B2B marketing executive, very different conversation. I would know when your LinkedIn post is AI generated and when you send me a sequence that's completely bonkers.
Yeah.
We don't do that with restaurant tech because they don't even read that email. Even if you write them the most heartfelt, we love you to death, they may not even get to that.
Yeah.
So for me, it's all contextual. It's like, how are you looking at your tech stack, but you're also looking at your customer profile and what makes more sense. And sometimes it's hard. SMBs are hard. They sometimes may not be, they may be old school. They're still writing things on paper. So your Gen AI kind of useless. So it's very contextual to your market. And it's very contextual what being successful. And again, what are your salespeople are good at? Are they good at cold call, following up with email, then follow up, then schedule a demo? Great. But you need to understand how also that works.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're very in tune with your IPC, how they work. It sounds like your sequences are probably more heavy on the call side of things than they are on the email side of things, right?
Email usually is a follow-up to a call, not other way around.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. Great. That's really interesting. So we talked a little bit about some of the metrics, and I just want to make sure we're capturing all of them. So at the end of the day, the focus really is on whether or not the company is thriving. Are we growing? Are we expanding? Are we retaining? We talked about pipeline generation. We talked about opportunity generation and ultimately revenue. Are there any other metrics that you look at or are measured on as part of your demand gen role?
Deal size, because again, we are a SaaS company and deal size matters. Your annual recurring revenue can be piddly or it can be significant. Even in SMB, if you're closing five locations, very different from one. So for me, part of the thought leadership and brand drive and collaborations and email marketing and is enriching leads. So when those leads come to my sales guys, they're juicy. They're not like somebody who's like struggling for a dollar and like piddling over like a $19 discount. You have to be very mindful that there are different operators in the space. So for me, if I can get across the lead that closes as a platform lead and it's really savvy operator and they stay with us for a long time, so address both sides of the bow tie, that's my ultimate. That's my North Star. Because even the leads who close are not equal. So for me, that deal size and the expansion potential is significant, and that's what I look at as which audiences I am reaching as part of my demand gen program that allows our sales guys to meet their quota quicker.
Yep. One metric that typically a lot of people will look at, and we didn't discuss, but I'm just curious, is sales cycle length, right? And so your reps, do they turn over their pipeline quickly? Like maybe within, yeah, they do, yeah.
OCC, one call close is a thing.
Okay. I love that. Okay, so before we wrap up the conversation and transition to what we call the lightning round, which is a little bit more personal than it is, you know, functional, what haven't we talked about yet as it relates to demand generation, your role, metrics, anything that maybe I should have asked you that I haven't that you thought would be useful for the audience?
I think marketing professionals, especially marketing executives, again, having been CMO for quite a while prior to this role, they have a certain inferiority complex where they feel they have to prove themselves, especially in front of the board, in front of the CEO, CRO, CFO, CEO. They almost feel that they're like, nobody understands them. And for me, it's like, you bring money to the table. Doesn't matter how fancy your campaigns are, you need to really showcase your worth by what you bring to the table monetarily.
Yeah.
And it can be like a hard pill to swallow because a lot of marketing is still like, I'm all about revenue marketing. I've been about revenue marketing for the past 10 years. That's how it is. So for me, it was a natural progression. But for a lot of it's a struggle. I think the debate will go away when the marketing becomes a revenue focused function.
Yes. Yeah. I did say that the last question, but I have one more. And there is so much conversation, excitement around the use of AI, right? And we talked about Momentum earlier. Momentum is a fantastic tool. We use it as well. Curious what opportunities, if any, do you see AI playing in your industry and as part of the whole revenue marketing side of things?
I'm a huge fan. Again, if we think about Gen AI critically, it's really synthesizing all the human generated content and giving it back to you. So it's a kind of cliff notes of the human knowledge. So I find it very valuable. And it was funny because I was in the CMO coffee talk this morning. And one of the suggestions that everybody loved, they're like, put in your board deck with all the slides, but also describe the personality of your board members, mm-hmm. what they didn't like about your deck in the previous sessions that you had with them. And ask your tool to give you suggestions on how to make it more compelling for those board people, personalities, their trigger points, their pain points, and what they call down on. I mean, why not? So for me, it's just more, I look at it as a guide and mm-hmm. as an advisor, but I would it would never be my final step.
Yeah.
Whether it's content or sequencing or intel or data enrichment or competitor research or SWOT analysis, it's a very powerful tool, but you have to, and that's where the human curation becomes so valuable. As long as you understand where the relationship is, you embrace it. It's like with money. As long as you respect it and you understand how it works, it's going to be a magic for you. But if you like either stressed or overuse it and heavily rely on that, where people start blocking your LinkedIn posts because you really should not be doing that. So you have to be very, very kind of like, I'm a human. This is my tool. Very valuable. Use it wisely.
Yep. Love that. And great suggestions as well as like thinking about your board personalities and using it as part of the prompt. I think that's fantastic. Okay, let's transition over to the lightning round. As I said, it's a little bit more personal. You know, what is the favorite part of your job at Charlie?
Making money. Not just for me, but for the company. Because I'm very, again, pragmatic, but I'm also very like in the dirt. Like my sales guys can tell me everything. If they have feedback, criticism, suggestion, like I'm on their daily huddles on the sales calls, like I'm part of the team. So for me, if I can help them meet their quota and I can help company make money and I can help company to become more competitive in the space that we are establishing ourselves in, for me, that's a win. Everything else is just kind of cherry on top.
Yeah, great. Love that. There's a flip side to that question, which is either least favorite part, or sometimes I ask the question a little bit differently, which is what's really hard about your job?
Just dispelling all the things we talked about. Again, I'm like, we don't need to talk about, you know, get into the rabbit hole about what is an MQL, what is an SQL, what is a sales accepted lead. I'm like, did you have a demo? Yes. Did you close the deal? Yes. How much money? How was that? Is literally what I will ask. So for me, it's just that educational chasm of what demand gen is, because a lot of people look at it in a derogatory fashion. They look at it as like a bottom feeder mechanism. And it is, it's just the optics that's just been propagated for so long. For me, it's the full life cycle just expressed in dollar signs.
Yep. What's one book that you've read in the recent past that you've really loved and maybe want to share with the audience?
Every December, I reread three books, Atomic Habits, The Alchemist, and Influence. And they go very well together. Find your destiny, practice on the regular. I just did my 5,000th ride on Peloton. Part of my daily routine, never walk away, never miss a workout. And the Influence, I mean, Robert Cialdini, it's a classic. If you don't know social, peer, authority, like basics, you're missing out. You have to know that stuff.
Yeah, and I love the idea of rereading it once a year.
Yes.
Right? Because there's so many things that you love, but other things have gotten in the way, maybe you've gotten away from it, and it's a great reminder to go back and do that. So that's a fantastic point. Any advice that you've received from someone that has stayed with you that maybe you'd want to share with the team? Things that maybe have impacted the way that you work or keep as a general philosophy?
Play on your strengths. If you suck at something, find somebody who's really good at it. The whole, you know, let's grind to get bad at something you suck at, I'm like, that's stupid. But if you're really, really good at 3 to 5 things and you are superior to anybody because you keep accelerating that strength of yours because it's your muscle, your atomic habit that you keep practicing.
Yep.
I don't believe in struggle. I mean, yes, you should have some and stretch goals, but like you're good at something. Do that. You suck at something. Find somebody else and bring into your team or, you know, find a resource in the company who can help you with that. Yep. You don't have to make it hard. Play on your strengths.
Love it. Any advice that you'd give your younger self, right? So if you can go back 25 years and go and talk to the younger Irina at that point, like what advice might you give yourself having the hindsight of everything you've learned over the past several years?
I wish I had a mentor early in my professional career. I did have tremendous mentors, but they came at midpoint for me, like early 30s. I think the whole mentorship from people who come organically into your life is really, really valuable. And I think my career would have been even more accelerated as a result of that. You have to figure out your stuff on your own, But having a mentor who really like, gets you and really supports you, I think, so I would recommend somebody who's starting out to look for somebody who can be your mentor, or even ask for that owner, like be proactive about it, because that will really help you.
What about people that are maybe working at organizations where they are, the company is very MQL focused, and they know that there's a better way, they know that they should be doing things differently, but they're not quite sure how to change that. Any advice in terms of how someone might go about influencing internally new ideas or innovating ways to do things a little bit different?
I actually got Tom, my CRO, take revenue architecture course like 6 months ago. And he was already, he's a smart guy, and we were already on the same page. But having the whole, you know, six models to work off and have this conversation around that. So I think I'm a huge fan of professional development. My goal is to take 5 LinkedIn courses each month, and I'm like at over 500 Pavilion, revenue architecture. So for me, it's that developing the common language. So instead of you being the lonely wolf and trying to persuade somebody, go to something that's already established in the industry and take that together and have that conversation, because it's the second opinion where you can have better conversation. Otherwise, you just get frustrated.
Yeah. Well, Irina, this has been a great conversation, not only from the demand gen side of things and thinking about revenue holistically. I thought you gave great advice there, but also in the lightning round, even though they tend to be like lighter, I think you provide a lot of really, really great insights for the audience. So I just want to say thank you very much for your time. I really enjoyed our conversation. I hope you have a great weekend. And that's another episode of the Revenue Lounge. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Randy. It's been a pleasure.